Happiness runs in a circular motion. Hello and welcome to Campfires and Color Wars, a podcast about summer camps and the stories we love to tell about them. Like the time during an evening program, Evie Davis shouted to Richard Corby, "Take off your shirt! Take off your shirt!" And when he obliged, she immediately shouted, "Put it back on! Put it back on!" I'm Micah Hart, and I'm amused. And for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to press pause on the world around us, transport back to the days of our adolescence, when the school year was just one long rest hour between days at camp. If you have a camp memory you'd like to have featured at the top of the show, you can always email us your short stories to summercamppod@gmail.com. And if you're going to do that, why not give us a review, give us a rating on iTunes, so we can continue to reach as many former campers as we can. This is a really fun episode. I really, really enjoyed talking to today's guest, Corinne Warsofsky. Corinne is a force of nature, frankly. She and I have been trying to get together to record an episode for a while now, and I'm so happy to say that we were able to do it. She is the founder, creator, director, runner, all-around engineer of Tribal Gatherings, which is an adult summer camp experience. I've been following, I've talked about it, you know, from time to time on this podcast, but I've been following the rise of these niche programming angles at summer camp in various forms and fashion for a while. And the adult summer camp experience is one that's definitely caught my eye that I think is, you know, got a robust future ahead of it. Obviously, there's the reason this podcast exists is because I miss the experience that I got to have at summer camp. And so the fact that Corinne and her crew have created these, you know, four-day getaway experiences for people to really dive back into that camp lifestyle, whether they've been before, whether they haven't. And we get into a lot of that in the episode, but it just sounds incredible. It sounds like so much fun, and they're actually doing one in the Atlanta area, looks like later this year. So, you know, maybe I'll make it down for that and report back on what it's like. I don't know that my old ass at this point is really in the target demographic. Seems like it's kind of the next evolution of if you go on Birthright trip kind of thing. So either way, it sounded really awesome. And in addition to being really inspiring and sharing the message of, you know, why they did it, she's very, very effective at her job. And not to say that I felt sold to in any way, but she makes a very compelling case for, you know, what the experience provides. It's not just the, oh, it's great to, you know, be silly and now you're an adult, you can drink and that's fun too. But the connection, the relationship development, all those things, again, that we just loved from our time at camp, really sounds like they are providing that in a very short window of time. And it really sounds like a lot of fun. But in addition to all that, she also really had some great camp stories from her time growing up. So really fun episode. Highly recommend that you listen to it. I mean, you've gotten this far. What have you got to lose? So without further ado, let's get to it. My conversation with Corinne Warsofsky. Corinne, I'm so happy to have you join us on the podcast. I've been watching what you guys have been doing from afar from the past few years and have really been interested in following in general sort of this burgeoning, you know, new camp growth area of family camps, adult camps, all these different specialty kinds of camps. And I'm sure there are others in your space, but yours is definitely the one that I've seen the most. So that probably doesn't mean anything for you, but it definitely seems like a really fun thing to be a part of. So I'm glad to get a chance to talk to you about that, and also just to talk summer camp with you.
Thanks, Micah. You have tapped into adulthood's best kept secret. So thanks for coming to us.
Yeah, we'll get to Tribal Gatherings in a few minutes, but I guess you know, I want to get the background before we get there. I would assume running a summer camp that you must have some background in going to camp, although it'd be fascinating if you didn't. So tell us a little bit about how you got started. What was your camp experience like growing up? Did you go to camp growing up?
So I did go to summer camp growing up, but I was an elder when I started, meaning I was 13, which is tough to start camp when you're 13 because people have been there for years at that point. But I became a second sessioner right away. So I ended up staying for the whole summer and didn't realize how much I needed this experience when I was younger. But I didn't go earlier, mostly because I didn't really understand what the concept was. My parents are not American. They're from Peru and Israel. And for them, summer camp was a completely foreign concept. So it took years of badgering from one of our neighbors who worked at the URJ saying, you got to check out this summer camp called Eisner in the Berkshires. It's a magical place. And finally, when I was 13, I was ready to give it a shot. And it took a matter of hours until I found my people and understood how special camp was. And having grown up with Jewish parents from two different countries who really had a shared sense of what diaspora Jewry looked like, camp for me was the first place where I found what Jewish community looked like in my backyard. That was not just Hebrew school and it wasn't just Jewish friends. It was a place that was my own. So I went to Eisner. I was a camper and staff member there for several years. And that kind of fueled my interest in living a camp life.
That's so cool. So first of all, I think you're the first guest we've had from Eisner. We're getting pretty close to have covered the URJ camps at this point. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. No one cares which other ones we've done, but I believe you're the first Eisner guest. I have friends that went to Eisner. I've heard nothing but good things about it. Now that you've kind of traveled around a little bit, what would you say are sort of the defining characteristics of Eisner as you know it?
So I've been to almost all the URJ camps as well, and they're each unique and special in their own way. But what makes Eisner particularly memorable and special is the physical property. So Eisner was built on a former estate. It was one of the co-owners of the Eastman family from Eastman Kodak. And it was donated several years ago, but built in the 1800s. It's about 140 years old. And the property was used as an experimental agriculture farm. So the legend has it that the nectarine was founded there, and there are greenhouses that dot the property and old rows of, like, I don't know how to pronounce, like, bushes and all these, like, formal gardens is what they call it, that aren't there any longer, but so many remnants of this old historical property are still there. So there's a 140-year-old mansion. It's haunted by a ghost named Gertrude. It's called Manor House. There's still the old lake that had all the formal marble docks around it, greenhouses. Legend has it that there are tunnels that go underground throughout the camp. There's just really a historic sense of time on this property that it was kind of cool growing up at a summer camp that actually used to be someone's home. Another cool fact about Eisner is that the person who, as legend has it, the Walker family who lived there, their daughter was confined to a wheelchair. And so while Mr. Walker would travel the world, he would bring back the world to his daughter who couldn't travel with him. So, for example, there's an area called the Universal Lawn that has trees planted from all different countries around the world. The architecture represents Spanish and Italian and different architectural traits from the countries that he used to visit. So it really is a cool place to go to summer camp.
I have to say, part of me is like, that sounds so magical and so interesting. And there is at least 40% of me that thinks that your counselor made all of that up. None of that is true.
If they made it up, we are definitely keeping the legend alive. We may not want to find out the truth.
140-year-old campground. That is fertile ground for telling some spooky stories to campers. Convincing them of some of ghosts and various other haunted things, because every camp has like the scary, you know, whatever the camp legend is. And so yours is Gertrude the ghost.
Oh, sure. And we tell her ghost stories at Tribal also, where we light candles all around the property and have someone telling ghost stories right at midnight, or if we're doing it inside. I mean, she doesn't always want to come out when we're telling stories, so we make sure a staff member's at the top of the stairs that pushes like an empty trash can down to make it sound like someone got pushed down the stairs and like does the sound effects all at the right places. It's important for us to traumatize the adult campers in addition to the younger ones.
Well, you want to give them the authentic camp experience, so I totally get it. Okay, so you went several years at Eisner and you were on staff there. And was working in camp something that you thought about, or in the camping world, something you thought about during that time, or is that something that came later?
My mom always said I would be a camp director, But the truth is, I actually worked in Jewish travel for a decade before doing this. So I always saw myself as an Israel professional, not necessarily a camp professional. After when I was in college, I started staffing NIFTY and Israel's teen summer trips for Eisner and then for NIFTY in Israel as an organization at the ORJ. And that sort of sucked me into the world of global Jewish travel. So I spent about a decade working there. And what they have in common, that this is Birthright, global Jewish teen tours, family trips, synagogue trip, camp trips, you name it, trips. However, those are also immersive experiences. And there is clearly a bridge between travel and whether it's domestic or international. And so we are creating domestic immersive experiences close to home. But I never saw myself as a camp director. I just saw myself as translating the concept of an immersive travel experience closer to home.
Do you see yourself as a camp director now, or do you still see yourself in that immersive travel space that you're talking about?
I see myself as an experience designer, and knowing how to hire the camp professionals and the people who really know this space. And I'm just like the crazy visionary who thinks that it would be fun to combine XYZ elements and make this crazy 4-day product. But yeah, I guess I am the camp director, but really, like, my whole team, regardless of their camp professional experience or not, we're experience designers. We know how to create magic in the moment and layer every bit and piece of the schedule with surprise and delight and create transformative moments of impact within a short time frame. So it's really more than being a camp director. It's more of like a magician of experiences.
I like that. That sounds like a good LinkedIn job title description. All right. So I am relatively a newbie to tribal gatherings. Like I said, I've seen it from a distance for a little bit, and I'm sure, you know, many people have seen stuff in the New York Times about it, but for those that haven't, tell us a little bit about tribal gatherings and kind of how that idea came to life.
Sure. So Tribal Gatherings is the leading provider of Jewish summer camp for adult experiences. We invite young adults in their 20s and 40s to come to a place where it's about stage, not age, and to unplug from their devices and to tap into the nostalgia of their youth, to meet new people, whether it's socially or romantically, or to reconnect Jewishly. We know that people are craving connection. So we create an incredible Jewish community wrapped in a really fun, memorable user experience that lets young adults explore, play, stretch their thinking, try things they don't have access to in everyday experiences, and walk away feeling part of something bigger than yourself. So we host summer camp weekends around the country. We're in the Berkshires to serve New York and Boston primarily. We're in the Midwest to primarily serve Chicago, Minneapolis. We're in Southern California, and we're expanding into Atlanta this year to go into the South. We get young adults from 19 different – last year we had young adults from 19 different states. So we're primarily drawing people from those target regions, but really people are flying from all over. So this is our fourth year now of running camp weekends. And the idea is that we are a bridge for people to connect to local Jewish community.
That's awesome. I wonder, like, the people that are coming, are they typically people who grew up at camp and therefore are trying to reclaim the magic for a few days of their experience? Or is it people who either didn't go to camp and know nothing about it, or didn't go to camp and are so tired of hearing their friends talk nonstop about it that they're like, all right, I gotta try this out for once?
D, all of the above. We say that we have four kinds of people that come to tribal. We call them the FOMOs, nostalgics, the do-overs, and the tag-alongs. So you can probably guess what each of those mean, but the FOMOs are people who never went to camp, who heard their friends yapping about it forever, that finally are now 30 and can give it a shot. The nostalgics are diehards like you and me. We love camp. We want to have a taste of that in adulthood because it's hard to find meaningful Jewish community and connection and when you're grown up. The do-overs are people who did not have a good camp experience that now need to redeem themselves, or they're people who didn't have a good childhood Jewish experience. Like, they're the Hebrew school dropouts. They're the people who weren't really inspired when they were younger, whether it was elementary school or college, and are looking to give it a second shot now that they're older. And the tag-alongs are the people who weren't really expecting it. These are significant others, friends of friends, who were just dragged by their friends to be like, please, 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 I want to go, but I don't want to go alone. Those people always end up getting the most paper plate awards because they're the biggest risk takers and had zero expectations. So those are the four kinds of people who come. Everyone falls into at least one category. But I can tell you the majority of our people are Birthright alumni, about 70%. have been to Israel, about half of camp experience. Not everyone had Jewish camp experience, but about half went to camp. The majority of people are between 26 to 38. Our average age is 30. But really, it's a stage, not age environment. The minute you walk on, nobody is going to ask what you do for a living or how old you are. They just want to know if you'll be on their slip and slide kickball team. Are you good at making friendship bracelets? And can you get them a drink from the beer canoe?
The beer canoe. Staple of camp environment? Maybe not. What, when you look at those different types of people that come, who do you find, like, because it's funny, like, I always talk about, you know, bringing camp into, like, my world, like, my professional world. And I'm always looking for opportunities to do that in lots of different ways. But when I think about, like, when you do, like, team building stuff in a work, in a corporate environment, there are people who are just, like, can't be bothered, are so cynical, and just don't want to be part of it. And I get that. It's especially if you're in an environment that doesn't foster that kind of, you know, everybody's buying into it. It can be really hard. And of course, that's what I loved the most about camp, is that we were all sort of, there was a suspension of disbelief on everything. You know, an evening program, you weren't actually going to China. You were pretend, like, all that kind of stuff, but you bought into it. And I'm curious, for, like, for the people that are coming, especially the ones who didn't go to camp, how quickly do they get over whatever level of cynicism they might have and actually buy into what everybody is doing?
There isn't time to not buy into it, because the minute you step off the bus, somebody is handing you warm cookies and champagne as you check in, and there's a silent disco going on. So, like, you don't even have time to adjust. You just dive right into it. And one of my favorite quotes from a camp director I ever heard is that camp is a place where kids feel like grown-ups and where grown-ups can feel like kids. So we get self-selected community of people. These are young adults who are looking to try something different, and whether they want to reinvent themselves or just experience a completely fun weekend with new friends who they're meeting on the spot, it's only 4 days. So people really walk off the bus or right out of the parking lot ready to embrace the weekend.
Yeah, you're really packing a lot in. One of the things that's been interesting about doing this podcast is, you know, going up at a traditional summer camp like Eisner, like Jacob's, it's a month, or, you know, or almost a month long. And I've had guests who went to camp for like a week, and I can't fathom that kind of existence of, like, packing so much into such a little period of time. Like, just the sheer volume of emotions that you're having in such a confined space. I'm sure that is similar for this group as well. Are you finding that people are, you know, is this becoming like a routine every year? The same group gets together and goes back for the same kind of weekend?
Totally. And it has blown our minds. We were not expecting this to be an annual retreat for people, but 30% of our participants are alumni. So we've hosted 8 camps, and we've had people attend 6, meaning that they sign up for multiple a summer. They'll go to one and then realize they want to do another later that summer, and they come back year after year. And our alumni communities are to be rivaled. They are so rich and so deep and so connected. I'm constantly amazed at how frequently people see each other, you know, off of the camp season. And we used to say growing up that we live 10 for 2, but these people really live 361 for 4. And it's amazing to see how deep you can form connections in adulthood in just 4 days.
I totally agree with that. And I do think that that's something that people who didn't go to camp would maybe be surprised by. But you absolutely can form a lifelong friendship in 4 days. And I, you know, like I said, I love what you guys are doing. And I especially think in this day and age, in the world we live in, it really is hard to find connections with people and find, we have a group of friends that we get together with, for, you know, New Year's and a few other times throughout the year. And every year at New Year's Eve, we get together for dinner and we sit around and just kind of chat and visit. And I think the theme of this year, and it's probably because it's the end of a decade and we're all getting older, everyone was very reflective, and it was just kind of discussed that, like, we don't have many opportunities to have this kind of, like, just sit back, relax, and talk about what's going on in your lives with people. And it's very special when you have that, and you want to hold on to it. And so I love the fact that you guys are providing that opportunity for people, because without being proactive, it's very difficult to find those. And for those that are able to do it, good for them. You know, but we all lead busy lives, and So it's great that you're doing it. What would you say, what are the things that you guys do from a programming standpoint that do you think remind you the most of the camp experience from when you were a kid?
Oh, good question. I'll give you the overview of our camp weekend. It, as you were saying, you can't imagine people who went to camp for just a week. We take 4 weeks and pack it into 4 days. All the elements are there. And as experienced designers, we're really good at engineering FOMO. So even if you wanted to do everything, you can't. You got to come back the next year. That's by design. There's no way that you can do everything you want in a weekend. So all of our camps start, for the most part, on a Thursday, and they end on a Sunday. And that's to give us 24 hours to kind of decompress before Shabbat starts. So during the day, we have camp electives, and we offer up to 70 per camp weekend. And there's always something that's athletic-ish, arts and craftsy, something that's food or beverage-related, something that's nature or mindfulness-oriented, or something that's just, you know, chill, like chillable. And so these include everything from human foosball to, we mentioned, slip and slide kickball, to Ashkenazi mixology workshops, macrame, terrarium making, shibori indigo tie-dye, making challah covers, candle dipping, all sorts of Jewish cooking workshops, synergy yoga. We offer like 8 kinds of yoga at camp. We rent a pontoon boat at some of our camps. We do Jews cruises. We do, you know, just a really big variety of new age camp activities, but some of the more classic ones are just as popular. So ropes course and archery and just traditional arts and crafts, which we have a beer garden that's up at camp. It's open bar. And so Bubby's beer garden is always filled with hammocks and Adirondack chairs and places for people just to hang out with a drink and color and make friendship bracelets. So there is definitely appeal in the classic camp activities, but people are drawn to the new age stuff too, whether that's, you know, hungry, hungry hippos or human foosball or bubble soccer.
Yeah. Can we go back to the slip and slide kickball? I'm having a hard time picturing that. So is it you run up and kick the ball and then slide down to first base, or you run, you kick the ball like normal, and then instead of running the base, you slide into the base?
Okay. So you need 100 foot of 6 millimeter plastic wrap, about 6 bottles of Dawn dish detergent, and 3 kiddie pools filled with soapy water. So yeah, it's kickball. It's refereed by, you know, according to kickball rules, but the tracks between the bases are slip and slide material, and we soak them up. So you leave smelling very fresh and clean afterwards, but just trying to run on those slippery plastic tarps is hysterical to watch. So people end up watching as much as they do playing, just because it's so funny.
Now, is this something you guys invented, or had this existed previous to tribal gatherings?
We invented it. As far as I know, we came up with the concept and piloted it at Green Family Camp. We did a custom young adult retreat for them in Texas a year ago, and it was so much fun that, yeah, we bring it everywhere now. No broken bones on that yet, but yes, it's been great.
I was going to say, because that sounds like something that we would have come up with for an evening program. And I'm frankly jealous that it never occurred to us to do that. Although we had a lot of fire ant issues, I feel like, on the athletic field at Jacobs. So the soapy tarp, we would bring out every once in a while, but typically would end up sending kids to the infirmary for, what's the, I'm blanking on the name, the pink cream that you put on.
I can smell it. I can't think of what it's called, but yeah.
I'll look it up. but yeah, anyway. And then what, I'm curious, what is the, has been the hardest thing to replicate from sort of the camp experience that you grew up with?
Well, booze was not allowed when we were at camp as kids. And no, I'm kidding. What's hardest to replicate? It's a good question. I mean, we try to foster a sense of community, which in everything that we do, which is really central to being a camper, right? You have your cabin community, you have your unit, you have camp overall, you have camp Shabbat, you have like these classic all community moments, the all camp dance. We try to bring all of that into the camp weekend. What's hardest to recreate? I mean, a sense of time. 4 days passes by really quickly, but people also lose track of time in that. Everybody wishes that it was longer. It never feels long enough. And you don't really have the chance to take as many risks as you do in 4 days as you would in a month. And I remember growing up, we used to say a day feels like a week and a week feels like a month when you're at camp, but really you have only 4 days to make the most of it. So
yeah,
time
yeah,
is hard
interesting
to
because obviously, yeah, you go for 4 days, you certainly want 5 days, 6 days, however, but I also think there is something to be said for scarcity. I would have enjoyed camp if it was 12 months long without question. I think, but I also think the finite nature of it does lend some, some bit to the specialness of it. So, there probably is some magic to, doing it over a shortened period of time and leaving people wanting more. So, that's very cool. Well, it sounds awesome. I wish I were younger to definitely get to experience it, especially probably as I'm gonna guess, and I could be wrong. I'm gonna guess that a lot of people coming are either single or not married yet, or is that not true?
Yes. We don't have statistics on what percentage who come are single, but from the looks of it, a lot of them are. Many people get lucky over these weekends, but it's also amazing to see relationships having transcended beyond. So we're kind of waiting for our first engagements to happen.
I was going to say, I would not be surprised if it hasn't happened already that you will start to see those camp romances really shape.
Oh, yeah. And a good number of serious relationships start because of tribal.
My dad, very few things made him happier as a camp director than when a camp couple, got married. He always called it inventory. I'm sure you will have that feeling of pride, inevitably when that happens. And I'm sure it will. Okay, cool. Well, let's move on to our Campfires and Color Wars questionnaire, title still pending. This is a chance to ask you a few more questions about your time at Eisner. And if these happen at Eisner, if these happen at tribal gatherings, either is acceptable. But question number one, tell us about your most romantic camp moment.
All right. Well, when I was 13, Eric Schneider was the hunk of our unit. And I'd been eyeing him for, I want to say it was weeks, but I bet it was probably like 5 days in reality. And finally word got out to him that I was interested in him. And I remember one day after evening program, we're walking back to our bunks and we kind of like met behind bunk 8 to like catch up and say, hey, how you doing? And he, kind of put his hands behind his back and was kicking the dirt in the ground. And he sheepishly asked me, and like the most romantic thing I've ever heard was, if I would go to first base with him. And I think that's still to this day one of the most romantic things anybody's ever said to me.
Listen, consent, it's important. That is adorable. And so what'd you say?
Of course. And then, it was a great first base.
Had you been to first base at that point in your life?
I had. I don't know if he knew that, but it was the way he just asked me with such lust and passion. It was really hard to resist.
Now, I have many follow-up questions on this story. because you mentioned at the top that your first summer at camp was when you were 13, and that can be a difficult time to enter into the camp environment. And I think, and I don't mean to stereotype, I think that is more the case for girls than it is for guys. I also think that it's like a balance beam, and you could fall off in either direction. You could either fall off in the, they already have their group of friends and I'm having a hard time fitting in, or you could fall into the, everybody knows each other and they're sort of sick of each other, and now here's this new blood and now I'm going to get a lot of attention and that's going to be awesome. So all of that is a lead up to my question, which is, if Eric Schneider was like the hunk of the unit, how did the other girls take this with you coming in and sort of claiming that trophy?
I think there was a collective sense of envy from probably 5 people. The thing is, camp was big. We had 120 people in our unit. So there was a lot, there was a lot of people, and that was over 2 sessions too. So, I mean, Eric was a cutie. I don't think that there was, I think I was the flavor of the day, and so other people surely got their try later on in the week, but it was certainly a moment that I'll remember.
Well, well done. And Eric, good job for being polite. Your credit to your species. All right, number 2, tell us about your best camp performance.
Okay, I'm going to go with an answer from Tribal, actually, which happened to be at Eisner this past summer. One of the camp electives we offered was Baywatch, spelled B-A-E, watch, which is really just pool time coded in like
I was thinking Beyonce, but go ahead.
So we had Eisner's got a beautiful pool, and we wanted to offer people to use the pool. We have aqua lily pads. We have all these like pool games and stuff. But we thought that we should make it a fun swim class instead, because I was on waterfront staff for 3 years as a counselor, and the pool was always my happy place. So one of my co-staff, Benjamin Michaels, and I, who's also on waterfront staff at Eisner, we probably were awake till 3 o'clock in the morning the night before preparing our hoog pitch, right? Like our elective pitch for camp. And we had 2 lifeguard sweatshirts and a snorkel mask and fins. And we had 2 giant floaties and those like big lifeguard, rescue tubes. And we had the Baywatch soundtrack playing in the background while we slow motioned walked really awkwardly for like way too long from the back of the dining hall to the stage as like the, you know, Berkshire's version of David Hasselhoff and Pamela Anderson. And we slowly made our way to the front and turned around in unison and had this whole script about how we're here for BAE Watch. And it was a place for people to practice looking really, really, really good as they jumped into the water. We spent way too long rehearsing for that 90 seconds pitch, but it got me a date after camp. So that was good.
There you go. All right. So a couple of things. One, that is absolutely my sense of humor. I am absolutely picturing that it took you like a minute and a half, that you didn't Wait, give up on the bit.
It was uncomfortable. Yeah, it was too long.
That, but see, that's what makes it so funny, is that people are like, this can't possibly still be going on. And then it keeps going. Oh, I love everything about
that.
Oh, yeah,
we had the Baywatch soundtrack on loop because it was too long.
That is awesome. And then you mentioned hoog pitches. I hadn't thought about that in so long. I don't think we did that at Gucci, but at Jacobs, that was definitely a thing. At the beginning of the summer, the staff would come up in front of the kids and hawk whatever hoog they were leading. So was that a thing at Eisner also?
Oh, my God, totally. Like, a good pitch can make a good sell. And you obviously want to have the most popular hoog, so yours has to sound awesome. So each of our staff, and we require this, if you want to be on Tribal staff, you need to audition with a hoog pitch, because that's what makes this fun. So people take this very seriously. And sometimes on staff, we give each other challenges, like you must say X word, or you must use like these props in your hoog pitch just to like add an element of fun for us. But yeah, hoog pitches are a big deal. And I have to say, we had like 20 people sign up for Baywatch. And, you know, we ended up spending the time like blowing bubbles in the water and playing pool games and mostly just hanging on the aqua lily pad. But it was great.
That's so fun.
Mission accomplished.
I really, I wish I had been there for that slow-mo intro. The uncomfortableness of it would just be so choice. All right, number 3. Tell us about your most embarrassing camp moment.
Okay. This is an interesting one. So when I was a camper at Eisner, I was not necessarily the conformist that camp wanted campers to be, right? I think I spent maybe 1 night a week in my cabin. We were always sneaking out. We were offering singles night each session. I was like a coordinator of it. We were streaking across the soccer field. Sorry, Lewis, if you're listening. Like, we just were always out and hanging out. Like, we were good kids, but we just, you know, we're always out and about. So, but always very respectful of the property and of camp, and we're always where we needed to be otherwise. Never disruptive. So when you're 15 in the oldest unit at Eisner in Olean, you go on a trip to Montreal. And this is like the culmination trip. It's a 5-day trip where you see all the European culture of Canada, and you get to lead the country. And there's all these like rumors of like, oh, you know, what are you going to do in Canada? Because the legal drinking age is lower there. Are you going to break the rules? Like, there's kind of like all this like rumblings. Nobody's like actually brave enough to break the rules. So our camp director, Doug Lynn, or assistant director, Doug Lynn, came up to our unit and is like, guys, you're going to another country. Don't do anything stupid. Don't, you know, break the law. Your represent, don't like get arrested. Don't do anything that is going to embarrass you or this camp or America or Jews. Like, no pressure, right? So we're like,
in that order.
Each other, and we kind of laugh. We're like, that's so cute. So thanks for all the suggestions of things that we shouldn't do. So we don't actually have guts to do anything other than like walk into a sex shop in Montreal, which is like, there's nothing there. But on the way back, we had had this like big plan of how we wanted to pull a prank on our staff. And
this always goes well. Continue.
So we were in Burlington, Vermont, and we had until 7 o'clock to have like free time and go shopping. And we're meeting our buses back right at 7 and heading down to camp. And my friend Sam and I, my whole group of friends, we had this plan of like, we're going to pretend to get arrested because this will be really funny. So we were sitting in a park and this nice looking officer walks by and we're like, now or never. And we run up to him. We're like, sir, we have a crazy question. Can you humor us? And we explained our plan and he kind of looked at us with like a discerning eye and was like, you're crazy, but okay, this sounds funny. So he tells us to meet him at the top of Church Street in 10 minutes, and we do. And he's coming back with like his mirror lens reflective sunglasses and his bulletproof vest and his like gray curly chest hair tufting out of his, you know, shirt. And like he's looking the part. And so he grabs us each by the shoulders and he drags us down Church Street, like where all of, you know, the 10 people in Burlington, Vermont are watching us, and round the corner, and our buses are there, and our unit heads, like, this is literally a scene from Wet Hot American Summer, like, in short shorts and a clipboard are like, where are Corrine and Sam? Why are they always late? And the cop rounds the corner and says, you put your hands on the wall, you have the right to remain silent, boom. We put our hands up, we're like, laughing into our sleeve, because this is just hysterical. Meanwhile, our unit heads are like, blanching, they're like, what's going on here? And the officer says, who's responsible for these two young women? And our unit head goes, I am. She like squeaks it. And he says, well, did you give them a specific list of things not to do, including shoplifting? And she looks like she's about to pee herself. And we're like kind of cracking up. And everyone is looking at us from the bus, like noses pressed to the glass. And it's just funny from our perspective. Clearly not for our unit heads. And she looks like totally petrified. And he says, well, the law in Vermont is different than Massachusetts. You're going to have to get their parents to come to bail them out. I don't care if you run a summer camp. Like, he was just like taking this even further than we would. So she goes to get like the binder of names and like contact info and like doesn't want to call the camp director first. And so as he's like giving these names, she's like clearly about to cry. And he's like, ma'am, there's one thing I need to tell you before you give me this binder. She's like, anything.
It's Color Wars.
This is just a big prank we're playing on you. And she looks at him like, are you fucking kidding me? You go do this to my co-staff, my assistant unit head director. He's over there right now. Go do this to him, because he hadn't heard it. So he does the whole thing over again.
Wow.
Okay, and we get back on the bus to applause, and it was like a whole thing, and clearly like we made peace with our unit heads. But we get back to camp, and we like kind of forgot that this had happened, but clearly the camp director was informed. So I got Hakshivu down to the winter office. You know, like when you get called on the announcement machine, like, Hakshivu, Hakshivu, will Corrine Wersosky please report to the summer office? Not even the winter office. The summer office meant you were going to the camp director's office. And I was in shock. I'm like, I'm actually going to get kicked out of camp. And I thought that I was going to be a color war general. I had all these hopes and dreams for my last summer of camp. And I knew that I kind of blew it because I was getting Hakshivu'd. So this is where I felt really embarrassed. I'm like, I'm such an idiot. I took that too far. I didn't need to involve the police. This was a bad idea. So I walk down and the camp director, Lewis Boardman, is walking with his hands behind his back. He says, go for a walk. I'm like, Lewis, I'm sorry. I know that was in bad taste. I didn't mean to cause any harm. I just thought it was funny. I like recognize I probably put them through some trauma. He's like, that little stunt you played, you think it was funny, huh? And I'm like, no, actually it wasn't. It really wasn't funny. He's like, you know, you really gave your unit heads heart attack there. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm apologizing profusely. Like, I don't even know what he wants to say, but the disappointment was so real. He's like, I've just been thinking a lot about this and what to do. And he slaps me on the back. He says, Corrine, you're a fucking genius. Now go back to your cabin and tell Sam she's in trouble. I was like, okay. So that was my camp summer prank and second of embarrassment.
That is, I have to say, that is epic. That is, I mean, high risk, high reward. Go big or go home.
It turned out to be even better because I got back to my cabin and my unit heads were like, Corrine, so you just got in trouble from Lewis, right? I was like, yeah, I guess. They were like, well, come over here because you're in trouble again. I'm like, okay, what's going on? They're like, you're a color war general. And I was like, oh my God, this is just the best day ever. So that was great.
I mean, so again, so many things about that story are incredible. I think the part I love the most is the unit head that you pulled the prank on, who's having a heart attack. And I'm thinking, like, the second she finds out it's real, she's going to be like, okay, maybe she's going to respect the game, but still be, like, so upset with you or whatever. And I love the immediate turn, that she's like, no, we're going to get someone else with this.
Exactly.
Like, that is quick thinking. I'm very impressed with her. I think that's awesome. It's so funny. That's such a thing. It reminds me, I'm just going to put this out there. This is probably not a good story. You probably had to be there for this,
okay.
But one summer at camp, we were staff at this, camp called Camp Dream Street. It was a camp for, disadvantaged kids. We would do for a week each summer. I'm sure a lot of the, you know, youth group regions and various camps do stuff like that. And we, for some reason, we had just a shitload of little, like, plush, like, balls. And they, for some reason, had, like, money on it. So we call them money balls. They're just little plush toys. And we're sitting in this room one night, and there's, like, 20 of them. And, like, one person walks in, and we just kind of absentmindedly started throwing them at her. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, this would be fun. So we told her to go get somebody else and bring them into the room. And tell them, like, whatever the excuse was. And then we would, as soon as they walked in the room, just pelt them as hard as we could with these pillow soft plush toys. And then that person would get to go get someone else. So we started adding more and more. So we started out, like, four or five people, five balls each, give or take. And by the end, we had, like, 20 people in the room, each with a ball. And so each time someone would come in and just get annihilated, it wouldn't hurt, but, you know, they don't know what's going on, and then all of a sudden, like, bam, and then it'd be like, okay, go get someone else. And it would go so quickly from, like, what is happening to me to, I cannot wait to get somebody else with this.
Oh my god, note to self, we have to do that this summer.
Oh, it was really fun. It was really one of the highlights of my life, sadly.
We love camp pranks. I mean, both as a kid, but also at tribal. Like, it's even better because you're a little bit smarter as an adult, which maybe actually makes you dumber. But I'll save the story for later. But yeah, camp pranks could be a whole other episode.
Yeah, we actually, I believe we have an episode in our archives that's specifically about camp pranks. I'll have to find that one and repost it. But anyway, kudos to you. Very well done. You deserved to be a general for Color War after that. I love that that Louis was able to recognize the genius in it. I'm trying to decide how my dad would have reacted to that. I'm not sure. It's a fine line. And also, frankly, congratulations on getting the police officer to go along with it.
That it could not happen today. That was for sure, yeah. Like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s gimmick.
Yeah, and the yes ending on his part as well. So, you know, just like I said, no risk, no reward. All right, number four, top bunk or bottom bunk?
Definitely top bunk, because you get to climb in the rafters to visit your friends. So even if the counselors were sleeping, you wouldn't have to, like, tiptoe on the ground. Although I guess that was equally quiet, but it was just more fun to travel in the rafters.
And are there bunk beds at tribal gatherings, or are people...
Good question. There are bunk beds, but every person has their own bunk, so you can choose if you want top or bottom, but you have both to yourself. So we keep cabins spacious, usually no more than 10 people, and if you want, you can have retreat center housing too. So like 20% of people opt for private housing in the retreat center, and the rest are in cabins. But every cabin gets a fun name according to the region. In California, we name them after grapes, so like Merlot or Cabernet. There's always been, like, the one raisin bunk, because why not? In Wisconsin, we name them after cheeses. So, like, Manchego is, like, the all-guys bunk. Or we have, like, there's always, like, the one Velveeta bunk, because it's funny. And then in the Berkshires this year, we named them after, like, Jewish deli sandwiches. But then we also had, like, the Hillel sandwich and egg salad. It was just, like... You know.
Now, at Eisner, did you have named cabins there, or was it just numbers?
Just numbers.
Okay. Yeah. At Jacobs, every summer, they had named cabins.
Fun.
There's always a theme. It would always be, like, books of the Bible or famous Jewish celebrities was one summer. It was always a fun little addition. All right, number five. What is the hardest you ever laughed at camp?
Oh my God, there are so many stories. I feel like I spend half my time laughing at tribal, especially, and definitely as a kid, but in adulthood, it's rare to have like laughing till your tears so consistently, and we're just really good at having fun. I would say, okay. Well, along the lines of pranks, we have a daily morning camp newspaper called the Tribal Tribune, where it's like our version of the Onion that reports on all the camp news that happened the day before. I will say that writing the Tribal Tribune usually happens between 1 and 3 in the morning over a 6-pack and like a full box of double stuffed Oreos. And everyone is so exhausted and you can't tell right from left. You haven't slept in days, even though camp has only been going on for like 12 hours. And we just like make a list of all the crazy shit that happened that day and write about it. And it's, I think like writing those every night when you're so tired is just hysterical. And like everybody's contributing to it. But so that in general is always so much fun. And then, but one of the articles that we do at camp is we announce that Color War has been canceled, that the town municipality of Great Barrington or Oconomowoc or Simi Valley, wherever we're hosting camp, has decided that due to lack of hustle on the slip and slide playing field and at human foosball, they have canceled Macabia to save face for all these adults. And that is like the headline article of usually the Saturday morning paper, because that afternoon is supposed to be Color War. So everybody gets to camp, like, so Color War is in the afternoon. Everybody gets to breakfast and they see headline, like banner headline, Color War has been canceled. And like, you see young adults so pissed. They're like, I signed up for this to come to Color War. What do you mean you're canceling it? Like,
they buy into it.
They're so angry. They're like, I came just to do Color War again. Like, you can't cancel that. And you're like, I'm really sorry. The town has voted against it this year. So people are like revolting. And then Brian Mitchell, one of our staff, gets up on stage and he like leans into it really hard. And he's like, I'm so sorry. You probably all saw the news today. Instead, this afternoon, we're trading in our color activities for like underwater basket weaving or something ridiculous, right? And
that's everyone's like the universal lame hoog amongst all camps. Yes. Is underwater basket weaving. I don't know and how that has like traveled so
collectively
far.
Groaning and like ugh-ing him and like so pissed. And meanwhile, don't forget, there's like mimosas at breakfast, so there's like a lot of emotions happening. And then finally Brian gets up there and like he puts his hand to his ear as if he has like an earpiece and he's like, wait a minute, I'm getting a signal. Uh-huh. Okay, I'll tell them. Guys, that was the town council for Great Barrington, and they have unanimously decided to reinstate Color War festivities for this afternoon. And people go wild. Like literally they're like cheering and they're throwing things and they're like hugging their neighbors, and we're just like dying laughing that people take this so seriously.
I was gonna say, Corinne, I think I was on board to come for one of these until the story, because I feel like I would immediately step on stage and be like, what is wrong with you people? This is obviously a joke. How can you not get, oh, the town voted? The town thinks you can't do Color Wars? You're buying this? That is hysterical.
Our delivery is really strong. I don't know what to say.
I'm impressed.
But the Tribal Tribune holds a lot of weight, you
Listen,
know?
If you're talking to 9-year-olds, I get it. These are adults. I'm disappointed in you people.
One of my other stories of like where I laughed uncontrollably hard is during Color War, we have a big relay race. And if it's a nice, if it's nice weather and a nice pool, we do like pool relay races. So the whole like relay race, Apache relay, whatever it's called at camp, is like, basically we joke, like we tell the campers that we spend all year writing it, but really we do it like that morning, right? In like classic camp format. And like, we've run so many of these that like we know at this point, but we basically think of all the funny things that have happened at camp and we like work that into the relay race. And sometimes it's just ridiculous. Like every transition is different, like grapevine or high knees or leapfrogging or like, like carry an egg on a spoon or using a skip it. Like every single thing is different. And each of the stations has something to do with something that we've done at camp. And like just coming up with those ideas is so much fun, because it's a chance to like not make this a cookie cutter program. Like, you're really paying attention to like the jokes of the weekend that everybody can laugh about. But during the pool relay race, like one of my favorites was, we actually couldn't think of anything. Like, we needed to like buy more time into the program. So this was at Camp Hilltop, at Gindling Hilltop in Malibu. And one of the relay lengths was, we had these two giant inflatable fruit, like a big pineapple and a big watermelon, and we had made people like go across it using only a frisbee or a hockey stick as an oar. So that was funny. But then, like, for the big culminating event, we just threw every single pool toy that was in that pool house, maybe like 100 items of pool noodles and duckies and inflatables, and we said, you have 2 minutes to clean this up, go. Oh my God, it's hysterical. Like, seeing people like basically on the verge of drowning, not so funny, but a little bit funny, like racing around trying to clean up like 100 pool noodles in 120 seconds is, oh my God, it's so good.
That's really fun. I mean, that's honestly like one of the things that I miss the most about summer camp, especially as a staff member, is just the creativity and turning something that is absolutely nothing into something fun. And it's so, it's funny because, you know, in the corporate world, we always talk about like gamifying things. It's such a way to get people to participate, and it's so true. You add some level of competition to almost any activity, and people will be more interested in it. And right, you could take something that if you just told them to do it, people would spit in your face, but, you know, add that kind of competitive element to it, and they totally buy in, and that's really funny. And cool that you're able to turn things that are otherwise, you know, useless into something with, like, emotional stakes to it.
That's so well put. The culmination of Color War is with a dance-off. And not that you need any dance experience, but people take the dance very seriously. And I have such an emotional moment at the end of every Tribal Color War where we see these, you know, 30-year-olds, people in their 20s and 30s wearing ridiculous head-to-toe outfits, like morph suits and warrior paint and body glitter and mohawk spray painted themselves. Like, they go all out for 5 hours of Color War and like these crazy suits, and they're doing some insane synchronized dance or swim. And I always like take a step back and have this out of body moment where I realize these people are normally doctors and lawyers and educators and public servants and government employees. And it just doesn't matter, because for 4 days you can be whoever you want to be, and the real world doesn't matter, because for 4 days all people want to be, at least in that moment, is the Color War winner. And that's what their identity is. And it's like so powerful to take this moment and appreciate that it just doesn't matter, you know, what happens outside of camp. Like, this is a chance for you to experiment with living Jewishly, meet new people, try things out of your comfort zone that you never thought you were good at, and make amazing friends and memories in the process.
That's so fun. Yeah, I definitely having FOMO having this conversation. all right, well, let's move on to Bitches and Roses, a.k.a. Roses and Thorns, a.k.a. Coals and Diamonds, a.k.a. Strawberries and Lemons, a.k.a. Peaks and Valleys, a.k.a. Pals and Wows. I don't know if you have any names for it to add to that list. That's the ones we've heard so far. Do you guys call it? Do you guys do Bitches and Roses or anything of the like at the end of the day at tribal gatherings?
As a staff, we start every staff meeting with something similar, but we call it Roses and Thorns.
Roses and Thorns. Okay. That's fair.
Although I like Bitches and Roses. So.
it's the 12-year-old boy in me. Can never never get past that. But this is a chance just to share one good thing and one bad thing that's going on in our worlds. So, Corinne, I'll happily allow you to go first.
Let's see. A good thing is that, well, we had this New York Times article come out now a couple months ago in the fall, and we're really starting to see momentum turn around from that. So we're opening up registration in a few weeks, around January 30th, and we could not be more excited. So that's a good thing. And of that, we have camps coming up in the Berkshires again over Labor Day weekend. We're going to be back in Wisconsin at the end of August, in LA in mid-August, and we're excited to be moving into Atlanta, into the South, on May 14th.
Nice. And do you have a thorn at all, or everything else is good?
The thorn would be that we have to wait 5 months until our first camp weekend.
That is a long time.
So long.
But But, you know, it's half the time as it used to be. So I guess there's a silver lining in that. My bitch, actually, my bitch and my rose are connected. My rose is I recently played in a charity basketball tournament at the JCC here in Atlanta. And it was a very surreal experience. I'm a adequately mediocre basketball player. But it just so happened that this tournament that I played in, they split it into two groups. There was like the younger group and the older group. And I, because I am now old, played in the older tournament. And most of the people, I'm 41. I was on the youngish end of the participants. And the people I was playing with were like, who is this guy? Like, who's this young buck out here, like, running around grabbing rebounds? It was very, very weird. And I felt like this young hotshot, just because, I don't know, I can move three inches off the ground, which is roughly my vertical. So that was my rose, was that during this tournament, I felt like a total baller. And my bitch is that the next day I was reminded that, no, I am old. I am 41. I was so sore. I mean, every part of my body ached. And it's not like I was banging in the paint or anything like that. I just played basketball for like an hour and a half. And like my eyeballs were sore. I don't even know how that's possible. So it was a very quick reminder of I'm not a young buck. But I did really enjoy myself. And I would like to say that we made the championship game, and it was called as a tie because a guy accidentally got hit in the head and started bleeding all over the place and needed stitches, so we had to call it, which seems appropriate somehow for a charity basketball tournament at a Jewish Jewish community center. That's my combined bitch and my rose.
I guess my bitch and rose were really generic. I'll give a more fun one, and you can edit this out if you want. On New Year's Day, I did a polar plunge in Boston.
Oh, wow.
Which, as a reminder, is really effing freezing. So showed up to the public beach in Southie, a.k.a. Whitey Bulger's former home, and there were, like, 500 people there all wishing you Happy New Year in, like, thick Boston accent, and then diving into the water together and, like, it was so cold. I think I blacked out for a little bit, but it was so much fun. And we came out and we were interviewed by some Chinese television station that was actually legit. And we found ourselves on Chinese TV. So that was kind of fun.
If you're going to be on Chinese TV these days, that seems like that's a better reason than most.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have had it any other way, wearing like a flying squirrel onesie I bought for camp and a panda hat. And similarly, I was a college hockey player and I haven't played hockey in a long time. And I just played a game like a couple days ago. Whoa. I'm telling you, I like when you said your eyeballs were sore, I felt that way. The minute I got off the ice, it was like, it was just such a reminder of our age. But that's why we need camp to like, at least, you know, remind us that we're still appreciated even for our B+ efforts.
That's right. And in my mind, I'm still camp age, even if my body disagrees at times. But well, with that, that is our show. Corinne, I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for joining us. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can always find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, any other podcast listening tool you can find. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are at Summer Camp Pod, and on Instagram at Campfires and Color Wars. And Corinne, if people want to find you on the interwebs, where can we direct them?
Come to tribalgatherings.com, which is the same as our Instagram and Facebook. And we love to get to know you and hopefully welcome you to a camp experience this summer.
That's awesome. If you have stories of if you've gone to tribal gatherings, or if anything else we talked about sparks something you remember, a great camp prank, I got to be honest, Corinne, I'm going to have to like take a look back at that one. That might be the best prank I've heard. We're about 60 plus episodes in, and I want you to know that's an epic prank. I give you full props for it.
Thank you so much.
If you think you can top that, you can always email us at summercamppod@gmail.com. Tell us all about it. If you want to hear more from me, you can find me on Twitter at Micah Hart. With that, Corinne, again, I really enjoyed talking about it. I definitely want to, when you guys come down here, I have to come check it out. Definitely go check out Tribal Gatherings. If you haven't been, you should check it out. Sounds like a lot of fun. We always end the show with something that my dad would always say, camp, the time at camp is precious, and you got to make the most of it, which it sounds very much like a theme for what you guys do at Tribal Gatherings. So we always say, don't waste a minute. So I like to end it by saying, Corinne, don't waste a minute. And you can say back to me,
time is a very precious thing.
I always like to see if I can, through body language, can get my guest to repeat.
Don't waste a minute?
Exactly.
Nailed it.
I'm just going to keep leaving these in because it's so much funnier that people are like, what do you want from me? That was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Micah.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs.